You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Broadway Gives Back Podcast. I'm your host, Jan Svensson. This podcast spotlights Broadway actors, shows, and organizations in their pursuit of social impact and philanthropy. Join us as some of the brightest lights on Broadway share their stories about their favorite charities and how they got involved, and the people and the causes who benefited from these philanthropic efforts. From stand-up comedy to movies, TV, and Broadway, Rosie O'Donnell has done it all, and she continues to do it all. She's been a three-time host of the Tony Awards, winning a primetime Emmy as host of the 1998 Tonys. She's been a tireless supporter of Broadway during the 6 years she hosted her daytime talk show, The Rosie O'Donnell Show, for which she won an astounding 11 daytime Emmys, as well as during her tenure on The View and on the Sirius XM radio show. All along the way, she has lent her voice to a number of important causes. She received the Isabel Stevenson Award at the 2014 Tony Awards in recognition of her commitment to arts education. I'm so thrilled to have her here today. Hi, Rosie. Welcome to the Broadway Gives Back podcast.
How are you?
I am hanging in there. How about you?
You. Yeah, the pandemic has successfully kicked my ass, I will say. It was bad. You know, it was really bad. I mean, when I was moving here, I just moved to LA. Here we are, out of New York, out of the sadness of staying inside in New York and fighting the weather in New York. And I just really felt like I needed sun, and I needed some sort of cozy little place from which I could restart right now. And that's what I've done, you know, and it feels really good. I mean, it's interesting. It was sad. It was sad to see the emptiness and the delis and our breakfast place closed and the laundromat closed and the people that you'd see in your neighborhood. And, you know, it was a big mind trip, I think, for the country and for the world. And most people are profoundly changed by it, I think.
I think you're right. I feel very changed too. And you know, I've articulated this to some friends, and I feel like their priority shifted, and you're right. It's sort of you're restarting your life. And in a weird way, this horrible thing has had good comes out of it. And this opportunity to be able to restart. A lot of people, unfortunately, did not have that luck.
Right. Exactly. What people are, you know, people who are struggling in one bedroom apartments with their three children in the Bronx, I don't even know what it was like. You know, I can't imagine what it was like to not be able to get out of your house. And, you know, mind you, when you have 8,000 square feet, there's always a place to go to be by yourself, but mostly they're just big empty rooms, you know?
Yeah. Big empty rooms. Now, I think we all suffered, and we all suffered in different ways and to different extremes. But I think that hopefully we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And now look, you're going to be a bicoastal person just like I am. Exactly. And it's actually the best of both worlds, you know, because you get to come to New York when, you know, when you want to, or when the weather's nice, or when you need to.
Right.
And so I spent most of the lockdown in LA, but I started off in New York, and that was just, it was really tough.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you know, this is actually going to be the finale of the first season of my podcast. So thank you for joining today, especially. I started with Judith Light, and I'm ending with Rosie O'Donnell. I think that's pretty damn good.
I adore Judith Light.
So do I.
Amazing actress she is. What a great person.
Yeah. And she's like you. She's an amazing human being and an amazing philanthropist, too. And you two have a lot in common. So I feel like it's a nice bookend for this first season of Broadway Gives Back. And I thought maybe we could start just to have a little fun. I'm going to shoot you some rapid fire questions, like maybe 5 or 10 questions, and you just answer first thing that comes out of your mouth. Okay. And we know with you that could be dangerous, but let's try it anyway.
Okay.
All right. First one. What's your guilty pleasure?
Ben and Jerry's Chubby Hubby ice cream.
Mm-hmm. At what job would you be terrible at?
Lifeguard.
Can you swim?
I could swim, but I think the panic of someone else drowning would be, I would have a panic attack in the middle of my job. So I would not want to be a lifeguard.
Okay. We're duly noted. What are three adjectives that would describe you?
Funny, chubby, happy.
Okay. What do you most give a damn about?
Justice.
What is a dream that you have that you've yet to accomplish?
Oh, wow. There's so many, you know. I mean, I'd like to really learn how to be a great painter. I've been painting since 9/11, but, you know, I'm self-taught and it's kind of primitive. And I try to watch tutorials on YouTube. But I would love to be, you know, more accomplished in my painting. I did have a couple of art shows and was in a museum once, the Baltimore American Visionary Museum. So I shouldn't complain, you know, but that would be one thing. I'd also love to direct something. I'm not sure what, but I, you know, I think I would really enjoy doing that, the multi-layered, not with me acting in it, just to direct something.
So listen, on the first one, our neighbors in Los Angeles are painters. And so they actually give painting lessons as well as being painters in their own right. So I'll hook you up because they're awesome.
Okay, great.
And then I do happen to know a director. I'm engaged to one. So maybe he can help you with the directing thing.
It takes so long to direct that, you know, part of me has to really have a couple years that I think are going to be lull, you know.
It also depends on what you're directing, whether it's a film or whether it's That's television or whether it's a live variety show, which goes quicker, by the way.
Yes.
What are you most proud of in your life?
Being a mom, raising my kids, you know, having a good relationship with my kids, having myself accessible to them at all times. And, you know, I think that the mother part of my life and career has by far been the best thing. It overshadows everything else.
Amen. What are you most grateful for today?
I'm most grateful for, you know, the kind of life that I get to live. You know, there's a lot of people who felt the way I did in the pandemic and got severely depressed and don't have the ability to go to their apartment in New York or fly to LA and rent a house for a year, you know. I am exceptionally grateful and privileged from the success I had from 6 years of work on my TV show, which has enabled my entire life to be pretty much carefree financially as a result of doing that show. And it's provided me with so much comfort and stability and a lack of fear of what the future will bring. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times on this podcast, we talk about kindness. And I just wondered, what's the last random act of kindness that you performed for someone?
Oh, that I performed, you know, all Jewish people say, you're not supposed to talk about the mitzvahs that you do, you know.
And I'm a Jew, but I just asked the question anyway.
Yeah, but I, you know, I have a hard time doing that. You know, I do it anonymously sometimes. I do it to people in need that I see on the internet, people that I know that are in crisis. I do it all the time. I try to do it. You know, I mean, I'm a very big tipper. I leave 100% usually. And I remember what it was like to be a waitress. And so I know, and there's been so many times that I'll be walking in the theater district after or before a show and somebody will stop me and go, I was a waiter at Joe Allen's and you left me $200 on a $200 bill and I was able to pay my rent. You know, like people tell me stories like that, which make me even more excited to be able to do it.
That's a very nice act of kindness. And it is the small things that count too.
Yeah.
Speaking of Broadway and Times Square and Joe Allen's, I want to segue a little bit into your career and Broadway in particular. Broadway is such an important part of your life. And, you know, in sort of whatever you did, whether it was television or radio, Broadway's always been incorporated. So I know you have a great story about growing up and and your teacher. And I just, can you just tell people how you, your, where your love of theater comes from?
Well, my mother loved it. My mother loved it so much. And she loved Barbara Streisand. That's where my love for Streisand comes from my mom. And, you know, she would listen to the original Broadway cast recordings of Oklahoma and South Pacific. And we had them all in our house. We weren't really allowed to, you know, use her records or touch them because there were five little kids and a lot of scratches that could happen on her very, very loved and desired original Broadway soundtrack. But I remember learning all the words to Sweet Charity, you know, being a little kid in school, and everybody else in show and tell would say, I brought this doll, I brought this. I said, I'd like to do a number from South Pacific. Bloody Mary is the girl I love. And I would perform, you know, some Broadway show tune. I remember in high school, I auditioned for the High School Musical doing Chicago. Come on, babe, what a way to town. But I just always loved it. I mean, I was lucky enough to get to the theater when I was pretty young, and I fell in love that first time. And, you know, I saw very early on, I saw Alan Seuss in Sherlock Holmes, and he was fantastic. I mean, absolutely fantastic. And I saw Bette Midler when I was 10 on Clams on a Half Shell. And I remember thinking when I saw her, I want to be her. I didn't think I want to be like her. I didn't think I want to try to, I wanted to be her. When I saw what she was doing up on the stage, and not that I could ever do that, not that I had that singing voice, but inside of me, I knew that was the goal, is what Bette Midler was doing on the stage. And I was lucky enough to see her do that live when I was only 10. You know, I never got to see Streisand perform until I was an adult. And that's only been in concerts. It hasn't been in a Broadway show or, you know, anything like that. So I think that Broadway is the reason I wanted to be in showbiz. You know, Hollywood was sort of vague and elusive place. I didn't know how one got there or what one did when you're there. And
it wasn't the Long Island Railroad. Let's put it that way.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. And you couldn't just hop on the train and get a $5 standing room ticket, you know, which you could do when we were little.
Right.
And so I always wanted Broadway to be part of my career. I wanted to be a harlot, a backup singer for Bette for many years. And, you know, I'm totally the wrong type. They were all like, you know, pretty voluptuous, sensual women in dresses dancing behind her. You know, I don't know why I thought that would be a perfect job for me, but that's one thing that I wanted to do when I was very young. And so Broadway has always meant a lot to me. You know, when my daughter ran away, she's 23 now with two children, but when right before she turned 18, she ran away to her birth parents. And it was a devastating time for me. And Hamilton had just opened at the public. And I was lucky enough to see that in one of the first iterations of the show. And I was sobbing pretty much the whole time. And so my shrink after about 6 months would say to me, you know, where's your tears about this situation with your daughter? Where's your tears? I said, every night at the public theater that I can get a ticket, I go to see Hamilton and I cry. And I cried about my daughter. I cried about, you know, the place that we were both in, and it's quiet uptown, and, you know, forgiveness. Can you imagine? Mm-hmm. You know, there was just so much that really stuck to me. So I've always been saved by the life raft of Broadway. Like, just when I think I'm going under, you know, in comes another something that just lifts my soul and spirit, and I know everything's going to be okay.
I love that. My God. Lynn was a guest on this podcast too. I'm going to make sure he listens to this because it'll mean a lot to him.
He's something else. I mean, you know, it's hard for a young person to take their place among the greats like Sondheim, but he did, and he is, and, you know, it's amazing.
But you and I, we have worked together on several occasions. You were the Kids Night on Broadway ambassador when I was at the Broadway League. We worked a lot with Rosie's Theater Kids and on the Tony Awards. And you know, you, for me, you've always been one of the most caring people I know, but there are a lot of caring people, but you're also one of the most outspoken people I know about what they care about. And that's why I really respect you. And I really wanted to have you on this podcast. And I wanted to ask you, what motivates you to stand up for those beliefs and for the causes that are so important to you?
I think my mother, you know, my mother was very concerned when there was no justice. You know, she was very vocal, and she was the head of the PTA at my school, and she was the head of the parish council at the church. And, you know, I remember her coming home from the parish council meeting and saying that, you know, Father John was yelling at her saying, "Roseanne, stop rocking the boat," you know. So I always knew that, you know, my mom had sort of a fierce defendant, was a fierce defender of the underdog and people who were wronged. And I remember as a little kid, her collecting all the clothes that we had, and we were not by any means wealthy, you know, but and putting, giving the clothes to St. Vincent de Paul. And then I would see a family in this school with our clothes on, my family's clothes, you know. And it taught me at a young age how, if you think you have it bad off, there's always people who have it worse. And, you know, reminded me or taught me that that was important to care for our neighbors and brothers and sisters. And, you know, I don't know, I think it was from my mom. I learned to stand up for what I believe in. And I just have always been that way. I don't know.
My mom was similar. I think our moms could have been friends, because my mom was very similar. And I would probably answer that question in a similar way. Just my mom has been definitely my influence. And speaking of women who've been influential, I'm thinking of Isabel Stevenson. And there was an award, a Tony Award, named after her that you received in recognition of your commitment to the arts, particularly arts education, and specifically for New York City school kids. I have actually gotten to witness on many occasions the amazing programs that you have done with Rosie's Broadway Kids and now Rosie's Theater Kids. And I think you just had a gala recently too,
yes,
this past week, right?
Passing it on mentorship program, yes.
So I want you to talk about Rosie's Theater Kids, but I just know for me, what was so astonishing and meant so much was that, you know, your whole idea of the program was to start with these kids when they're young and to be with them the whole time and get them into college and just help them with whatever it was they needed. And it was such a holistic sort of 360 kind of approach. And I hadn't seen that. And I still really haven't experienced that in other programs that I've been involved with.
It's very hard to get funding for programs that are all inclusive like ours, because, you know, if people have a need that is more visible, if people are hungry, or they, you know, it's a sick child, or they need shelter, or it's so much easier to sort of raise money and to keep the services going. But for a program like ours, which does start in the fifth grade and is a holistic view of the life of these children. And most of these children live below the poverty level. They're on free lunches. They've never been to a Broadway show. So we do the 17-week in-school program, and then we take all the kids to see a Broadway show. And the first time we went, there were like 200 kids. It was our first summer. We didn't know how we were going to do it. And we went to AIDA, and this little boy, Zion, said to me, "Where do we sit?" And I said, "How about right there in those empty seats?" It was 200 empty seats in the orchestra. And he said, "You mean in the velvet?" Mm-hmm. He couldn't believe that he got to sit in the velvet, you know? And it really made me choke up. You know, I got such tears in my eyes. And I thought, every kid in New York deserves to sit in that velvet and watch the magic that happens in a Broadway theater. It's like if you lived in Hawaii and you were never allowed to go to the beach. Mm-hmm. You'd have to walk past the beach and, you know, smell the salty air and feel the sun on your face, but you weren't allowed to get there, you know? And that's sort of what is happening now with the pricing of Broadway shows, that the cost is so high that it's really prohibitive for most families. And so we wanted to make sure that these children got a chance to see it early on in the fifth grade, so that it would stay with them and be hopefully, like it was for me, a rope down in a tunnel or in a hole where you could climb your way out, you know? And there are people at the top of that rope making sure it's anchored, and encouraging you, telling you how to do it, you know, inch by inch. And we have so many families that write and say no one in their family ever went to college, and they never thought when they started this 14 years ago with their kid, or 20 years ago, in fact, that would be the outcome, you know, is all of the percentage of kids who go on to college. I think we're at 100%, and that's pretty remarkable. Lori Klinger, who runs the program with me, for me, she does an amazing job and really loves each kid up close and personal, and affects their life in a very beautiful and dramatic way. And she's wonderful at doing what she does. Her mother did the same exact thing in a small town where she grew up in the middle of the country. And now Lori has sort of taken the mantle and is doing it in New York, and has been for a long time. She worked with Jacques Desmoises before she worked for us. And we based our program on Jacques Desmoises' Dance America, how we brought the theater to the kids, and how Jacques brought the dance to the students. And I think it's been widely, widely recognized as a phenomenal program, and one that really does alter the families' lives of the students we touch and teach.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
You know, I want you to describe for people, because I don't, like, I just think about that townhouse, and I think about the homework room and the studios, and just, you know, it was like a place for kids to go to, in addition to, you know, all going to Broadway shows and being exposed to the arts. But it was like this actual physical place that felt so safe, and that kids knew they were supported there. And I think that was part of the approach, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we needed them to have like a home base. We first few years, we didn't have a home base, but we thought we were only going to do fifth grade. Then the next year we had 10 fifth graders who are now sixth graders. And then the next year we had like 20. And then we had, we had this core of people that we needed a place for. So we bought an old sewing machine factory and ripped it out and had it redone. And we made it really, really nice, because you know, the kids don't have great places to live a lot of the time. And we wanted them to have a clean shower and fresh soap and towels. And so if they're not able to get that at home, they can get it there. And we have nutritional guidance, and there's food, so they can, you know, eat whenever they're there. It's healthy options. And we teach a lot of them about the importance of nutrition and how to make better choices in their family food wise. And, you know, we made a home for them. And when they first came in, they're like, this is ours. Mm. Like, this is yours. They're like, this whole place. I'm like, this whole place. And it's been for 20 years now, you know, it's been a remarkable success, and I'm very proud of it.
It really is amazing. And I loved being involved with all of that. I love the story about the velvet. It's always stuck with me. How has the program gone during the pandemic? Like, what happened? What did you guys do for the last 15 months? How did you handle that?
She did Zooms, you know, Zooms and learning and individual counseling and stuff one-to-one on Zooms or in classes on Zooms, but you know, it's been hard. It's tremendously difficult to raise money during a pandemic. I mean, everyone is suffering and, you know, worried whether or not we would get through it, but we did, luckily. And we got some grants, you know, that we really needed. And we're hoping that we can keep it running as long as we can. And, you know, when I was on TV, it was a little easier to raise money than it is now, you know? Yeah. So we keep trying, and so far we keep getting by.
Well, the townhouse is named after your teacher, right? One of your teachers?
Yes. You know, the Maryvale Arts Center, her name was Pat Maryvale, and she was my math teacher, which was one of my worst subjects. And I ran away from school like the first week because somebody asked for my mother's phone number, and I didn't want to say it, that she was dead. And it was just 2 years after she died. And I ran and was in the woods, and all the, they couldn't find me. And it was a big thing. And all the teachers knew. And this one teacher took interest and befriended me and let me into her life and family. And she was the first person to say, "I love you" to me, the first person to really hug me. And she changed my life. You know, I'm the godmother of her children. And she passed away when Vivi was born. And I miss her every day. And she, I don't know what would have happened to me in my life if there hadn't been a Pat Maryvale. And for these kids, a Lori Klinger, you know.
And a Rosie O'Donnell.
And a Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah. So from arts education, LGBTQ issues, you've been passionate about a lot of causes and you've supported lots of organizations. And I just wondered, how do you choose? I mean, obviously the arts education we've been talking about, and that seems like pretty obvious why that you're there. But if people ask you to support other things, or how do you think of other things? Like, do you support political causes? And I mean, how do you decide where you're going to put your money, where you're going to put your sweat equity, your mouth, you know, the whole bit?
Well, you know, you do your research, try to find out about the organization before you just donate and get involved, or you use your name. You know, you try to make sure that it's on the up and up. And, you know, there are causes that come to me, you know, through the newspaper. I was reading the internet, and I read that this 24-year-old woman was about to be arrested by the federal government for releasing the proof that Russia interfered in our elections. She worked at the NSA and she was a translator, and she had a stellar record in the Air Force and a stellar record in her career as an interpreter. She spoke Farsi, and she was arrested and given the largest sentence ever given to someone for that charge. And you know, I've been fighting hard for her release. And how I found out about that was I read it and then I Googled and I found her mother. And I called her mother and said, you know, "This is Rosie O'Donnell. And if there's anything I can do to help you with your daughter in this situation." And, you know, she was overwhelmed and very grateful. And, you know, I've come to know Reality Winner and have corresponded with her during her prison time. And she's, you know, hopefully about to get out, and that will be a happy day. And then we can work on, you know, getting her record expunged so she can vote, so she can do all the things that, you know, non-felons can do. But we'll see, you know, we'll see if Joe Biden steps up and really, really fights for that cause. But whenever there's a cause that really hits me, I am powerless. You know, I used to say to people who called me, like I remember one organization called the Scleroderma Foundation. And at the time I didn't know what it was. And they sent me a video and I watched the video and I of course went to the event, but then I said to my publicist, "Don't send me any more videos," because I'm powerless. I'm powerless to do it. When I hear of it, I feel like, who am I sitting in this, you know, lap of luxury to not help, you know, who am I? But, you know, you're only one person at the end. And, you know, it's a hard thing to learn when you're the one who feels like, or people think that you have a magic wand, but you don't, you know, you don't have a magic wand to fix. Now, maybe people like Bill Gates and Oprah have magic wands, but I never got one.
Well, I'm going to pretend for a moment. Let's pretend you have a magic wand and you could use that magic wand to make any change you want to the entertainment industry, Broadway specifically, but the entertainment industry at large. What changes would you want to see? For example, Broadway's reopening in a few months, actually in a few weeks because of Bruce Springsteen. Thank you, Bruce. But what, you know, as Broadway comes back, it's been a, you know, it's been a pause where I think Broadway needed to also make some changes in how they do business and how systemic racism issues and other things. But I just wondered if you could wave that magic wand that you just talked about, what would you think happened?
Well, the systemic racism, the misogyny, the unequal pay, the horrible pay, the unions not being respected. And I don't know. I there's so much wrong. And you have such a dream of Broadway when you're a kid. I will say this. Of all aspects of show business that I've been lucky to be involved in, including being an author and being on Broadway and TV shows and movies and producing and, you know, I never have had as close to an experience as I dreamed of as I did on Broadway. Showbiz is the best on Broadway. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean it's not without problems and there's some Me Too stuff that we need to clean up and, you know, there's like a monopoly by the three families. They're like the Gambino and the, you know, all of the crime families that run everything. And, you know, I came in as an independent producer thinking, oh, Broadway will be nice to me because I helped them for so many years. And, you know, we were eviscerated. My production life of a Broadway producer was quickly ended after the lack of success of Taboo.
I want to say one thing. For Taboo, I went to the, it was the night before opening night of Taboo. I sat next to you. I don't know if you remember this or not. And the best part about that night, well, I'd seen the show, first of all. It was my second time seeing it. So I'd seen it a few nights before. And then I got invited back, I think it was by your brother, and I was sitting next to you. And I sat there just watching you out of the corner of my eye, but also more feeling your energy and feeling all that connection. And it was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had on Broadway, was just you leaning in to that show. And that show,
I love that show. Great. Stephen Sondheim said it was one of the most underrated musicals in American musical history, which I felt like validated and, you know, vindicated by Stephen Sondheim. So thank him for me if you ever chat with him. But it was a big disappointing. I thought after my TV show, I was going to be a Broadway producer and just produce musicals. But boy, how that world is closed if you're not a Niederlander or, you know, a Schubert. Like you're out there by yourself in a land of sharks and you got a blow up tube, you know, in the ocean, and it's not easy to survive. But, you know, we have to take responsibility for ourselves and what kind of an organization do we want Broadway to be? There are beautiful things about Broadway, like Equity Care, Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, and the way the community sticks together, and the Gypsy Rose contest, and all of those things that raise money for different charities. I just think it's the best part of show business is Broadway.
I agree. You know, you have so many fans from all of your different things that you've done in your career. And the heart of this podcast is really talking about giving back, being of service, philanthropy. There's so many different words for it. But how would you, if you were talking to fans, particularly younger people, how would you talk to them about the best way to get started or to continue in doing good? When there are so many causes that do need help, how do you think people, if they came to you and said, Rosie, give me advice, you know, I want to be a good person, I want to be a philanthropist, what does that mean to you? And how do I get to do that?
You know, there are little ways that people can do it every day. And there are big ways, you know, and the people who give $1 million get lauded as, you know, the most virtuous. That's not the case. It's just they're the richest, you know. But you find out that the people who give the most to GoFundMe and all of these charities are people in need. They're not the very wealthy. I have found the very wealthy have forgotten what a wonderful gift to yourself to be charitable, to be a philanthropist, what it feels like to take the money that you have and spread it out, encouraging young things to grow, as Dolly Levi said. You know, that is a joy that is unmatched. And when you can make someone's whole day or week or year or life, you know, by giving a little bit of yourself, you should do that if you have the chance. And don't wait till you're rich to become a philanthropist. You can be one at any income.
That is a perfect way to end this podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And to all the viewers out there, all the listeners, I guess, we'll be back in the fall with more season two of Broadway Gives Back podcast. Thank you, Rosie.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Broadway Gives Back. Broadway Gives Back is part of the Broadway Podcast Network, produced by Dori Berenstein and Alan Seals with Brittany Bigelow, and music by Eric Becker at Broderick Street Music. Special thanks to my producing partner, writer, and friend, Jim Lochner, and to Katie and Yo at BPM, Julian Hills from the Bulldog Agency, the Charity Network, and to my fiance, Glenn Weiss, who is always my consultant. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream your podcasts. You can also follow Broadway Gives Back on Facebook and Instagram at Broadway Gives Back Podcast, and on Twitter at Broadway Gives. To learn more, visit bpn.fm/Broadway Gives Back.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.